Action Stations, this is the Trust the Wizards podcast with Kicker of Elves' Best of 2013.
And crowned a Friday night, drunks with orange traffic on hat. And Chairman Mao ordered, kill all the sparrows. And when they were dead, a terrible insect plague was unleashed.
The songs from the river, yeah, the songs from the river. I found it in the river, yeah, I found it in the river. Swim with the fishes now, swimming in the air. Sparkles in your mind and it sparkles in your hair. Songs from the river, yeah, the songs from the river. I found it in the river, yeah, I found it in the river. Swimming with the fishes now, swimming in the air. Sparkles in your mind and it sparkles in your hair.
Thank you.
I'm Rebel Ricky, and this is the Trust the Wizards podcast, and I'm joined by a man who put the Y into January, the Fib into February, the Arch into March, the Shrill into April, the A into May, the Juju into June, and the Irie into 2013. It's Mr. Sharitho Garbanzo.
Greetings and salutations, sir.
But first, with the hottest tracks from the last 12 months, with the big highs from July, from the most August, from August, from the ones to remember from September, move over, Robert, for October. Ones for which you would change your gender in November, and ones for which you would become a bender in December, it's Mr. Kick Ravels.
I can see what you're doing there.
It's the year thing.
Yeah. Good, that.
This is the best of the year.
It is.
Where all the joking stops and we get serious.
Stop fucking about.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, we've already heard one of my favourite songs of the year.
Soft-Hearted Scientist.
Soft-Hearted Scientist with the Song for the River. Song from the River, indeed. Well, I love that band. And I didn't know anything about them this time last year. Absolutely nothing. I didn't know they existed.
A mystery, were they?
Well, yeah. And it's one of the big finds for me, because it's really exciting when you find a band who are new to you, but they've got a back catalogue. Mm. Because being me, I buy up that big back catalogue. And there's so much to enjoy there. So we've played them before, actually. We played them on the podcast 8 we did in April. Which was
about the quarry.
That's right, yes. Yeah. There's something at night the quarry glows like a mothership. This is off their 2013 album, of course, False Lights. And I have to say, it's probably one of my favourite songs of the year. I mean, not just within the top 20, but probably number one or two.
Number one or two.
It's got a great catchy chorus and fantastic. I particularly like the use of the word vex.
Idiot car snobbery vexes me frequently.
Indeed.
Porsche driver sneers at Audi, driver sneers at Peugeot.
Yes.
Fantastic. Yes. There's so many great lyrics in that song.
Well, yeah, UK house property, the new pornography.
Yes.
Discuss.
Is it a Starbucks? Is it on Starbucks in the...
In the pyramids.
In the pyramids, yeah.
Tomb of Tutankhamun.
Yeah.
And also all the statues of the great and good came to life and crowned the Friday night drunks with orange traffic cone hats.
Yes.
And something about Chairman Mao killing all the sparrows.
Yeah, he ordered all the sparrows to be killed.
I thought he was making a very strong political point, and by the time he got to the end, I thought, I'm not sure what he's saying.
Did Chairman Mao order you?
Apparently so, yeah.
He ordered all the sparrows?
Yeah, he didn't like sparrows. Yeah. I think one probably sat on him.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Didn't take half measures, really, did he?
Get rid of those sparrows.
Or Maui.
But, I love that song. I think it's great.
I liked a couple of things about it. I'm a big fan of songs which have a sort of quite a long instrumental section at the start before any of the singing comes in. And there was a nearly a minute and a half there at the beginning. And then at the end...
And a bit of sitar as well in that, I think.
Some very interesting stuff. The bit at the end where the rest of the band stops and then the piano just keeps playing those four chords. And that was nearly a minute of that.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Did anyone else think it sounded a bit like another song?
At
the very start. Can you put it on again?
Please allow me to introduce
yourself. Oh, yeah. I'm a man.
Nothing so wrong with that. Other far less talented bands have built whole careers about ripping off Sympathy for the Devil, of course.
Yes, that's right. I'm talking to you, Primal Scream.
Well, here's another new band to me this year, but this time they are actually a new band, I think. We played their song Rejected back on the podcast number 7 in March, which was a B-side of a single. Then we went to see them in August, when there's a great live review with me and Chiritho did. You weren't there, of course.
No, I was on the motorway with a car.
You were at an AA meeting.
Yeah. Very much so.
And I just remember there being a fantastic guitar sound and really enjoying singing or possibly shouting along to the chorus of this song. Of course, it's Scott and Charlene's Wedding. It's from the album Any Port in a Storm. And it's the sound of true desperation being sung out of tune in a junk shop.
Junk shop.
was the Parquet Courts with You've Got Me Wondering. And I really enjoyed their album Light Up Gold that came out this year. But that track wasn't from that. It was from the follow-up EP, Tally All the Things That You Broke. And I really like it because it's a song of comparisons, of relativity, really, that informs us that toothache's better than heartache, seasick's better than heartsick, and perhaps less obviously, sunburn's better than heartburn. I also love the fact that on the album, or on the EP cover, the band name is misspelt.
Parquet Courts.
Yeah, so it's sort of phonetically the same.
Yeah.
But it's spelt wrong.
Parquet Courts, aren't they something to do with tennis courts, is it? Parquet is a paving flat of substance of some kind, isn't it?
Mm. Right. It's wooden flooring, yeah.
Yeah, it's good. I was very pleased to see. We played Stone and Starving off the Light Up Gold album on Podcast 11 back in July, and I was very pleased to see this album is doing very well in all these sort of magazines, end of year polls, and
but actually, it was released in August.
Number nine in the Rough Trade.
It was released in August 2012,
wasn't it? But not in the UK.
Ah.
Official
2012.
UK.
Oh, 2012.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
So this wasn't released in 2012?
No, this is for the EP, it's not for the album.
No, the album...
Keep up!
The album was released in the UK in 2013.
Ah, right, OK.
I like the... I don't know what it is, ocarina, recorder, whatever it is. There's a little sort of woodwind.
Yeah. It's a bit four-esque, didn't you think?
Yeah, now you mention it, yeah. There's not enough woodwind on punk records.
Well,
there is enough.
Did they remind you of the New Tone Neurotics?
Yes.
Really? I thought it was them for the first minute.
Mm.
Right.
Maybe when I read the sleeve, I thought it was them too.
Mm.
Yeah. But I particularly like the lyrics you mentioned there. Because when I read the lyrics, I thought, these are clever, considering you could barely tell what he's saying. And then that's a refrain, isn't it, in the chorus, that he changes, the heart burns better than...
Yeah.
I thought,
particularly like the, where he comes in with, well, a different voice comes in and says, barely.
And they must be getting quite big because I noticed that they're coming back to the UK to tour in February, and they're playing Manchester Academy as far as I could tell. Not Academy 2 or Academy 3.
Academy 1?
As far as I could tell.
That's where Panic and the Disco played.
Of course, yes. Mm. Who you abused roundly on that particular podcast. I always go off the number of YouTube hits that the videos had, and 19,000.
Wow.
Right. Encouraging 19,000.
Yeah. I should say before that we had Scott and Charlie's Wedding, who we like very much.
Yes.
Yeah. And there's a full podcast you can pick up with the gig from Scott and Charlie's Wedding.
You caught up on that gig by listening to that. Didn't
we mention that before?
Having reminded them, yeah.
Before on that one.
Should we move on?
Yeah. I found this the lyrics to this on a website called Rock Genius. Have you seen this?
No.
And they annotate the lyrics.
Oh.
So you can join and annotate the lyrics. So you said pick it up, and then I thought the actual band had done this and said, this lyric meant whatever it meant. But it wasn't. It was just any old joke and go and do that.
Uh-huh.
It's quite good. I'll show you that there.
So you can interpret it.
See, this is working particularly well on the podcast, this visual thing here, isn't it?
Yeah, what I'm showing you is it's from Rock Genius.
Yes.
It's on London Calling, and someone's annotated one part of the lyrics there. I don't know what it says.
None of us have got our glasses on. We can't.
London Calling, now don't look to us. Phony beat him when he was bitten the dust. The lyrics also reflect the desperation of the band's situation in 1979, struggling with high debt, without management, an argument with their record label over whether the London Calling album should be a single or double album.
Mm.
The Phony Beatlemania reflects the concerns of the bands over its situation after the punk rock boom in England in 1977 had ended. And then there's a lovely picture.
Mm. That's quite a good site. Have you said what the site is again?
What's to stop someone
rock
going
genius.
On, what's to stop someone going on there and let's say finding a Billy Joel song and saying this song is about worshipping Satan or beating your wife.
This is a bit paedophilia.
Yeah.
Mm. And he secretly... Of course he isn't.
Can I just say, my weekend is now full. The next song is from the only album released this year where my name appears in the cover. Well, actually, in the book, in fact. Because I am a strange angel, as I think I have outed myself before, which meant that I've partly funded the album for Through Muses, the album Purgatory Paradise. And Christian Hirsch's album notes give a background to each song. And the song I'm going to play from that is Sunray Venus, and I'm just going to read from the book. So what she's got here, for every song, there's a little essay about explaining about the inspiration for the song or what was happening around the recording of the song. And she's talking here about travelling with the band, I think travelling to record the album probably. Anyway, she says, One morning, a customs official was giving me shit about a Manly Beach shell I had in my suitcase when he saw the distortion pedal and decided it was a bomb. He wouldn't calm down about it until Bernie and I took the pedal apart in front of him, with about six other nervous customs officials looking on. Peering in closer, they got interested, started asking questions as if we were performing an operation for them. We went from embarrassed to smug, pontificating about electricity facilitating art. We impressed the hell out of those guys, who then waved us through, smiling and laughing. Bernie and I had to wave back with our elbows, though, because our arms were full of what appeared to be, or so appeared to us to be, unrelated chunks of metal. At the gate, we sat struggling with these robot parts in our laps until it was time to board the plane, and ended up tossing it all into the trash, embarrassed again. Where did Smug go? She was nice. That afternoon, I slipped out of the hotel and quietly bought a new distortion pedal. My point being that the jumpy customs official forgot all about my Manly Beach shell, which I still have, and it's beautiful. Definitely worth the price of a new distortion pedal.
Song as always from Kirsten and the boys and the girls. Are there boys and girls in the band
these days? Two other boys, just a three piece.
Right, so not the original. It's not the original lineup or anything like that.
It is the original lineup, bar Tanya Donnelly,
but not Tanya. Well, we need to speak about Tony.
You've got to speak about Tony,
though. Yeah, we'll come to that later on. So I'm just looking at through the back of the list of the people that have helped contribute financially, these strange angels.
Yes.
And I would like to set the listener a challenge. If you own this, look through, there must be about 1,000 plus names on here. See if you can spot Kicker.
Yeah.
His real name.
He's there.
He's there. I'll give you a clue. He's not Elizabeth Motica. Nor is he Kathleen Moskibrocki.
Don't give too much away now.
Nor is he Frederick Seigenfeld. He wishes he was Frederick Seigenfeld.
That's a folly to
say. That's a name to conjure with.
It's a gorgeous thing, though, isn't it?
It's beautiful, beautiful thing.
I think that says a lot for self-funding. You know, record labels aren't going to produce a book.
No. But it's interesting to hear the stories behind the songs, as you would expect.
Yeah.
Do you know what a sunray Venus is?
I don't know.
I do. It's the shell.
Is it?
It's the shell.
Well, isn't it the thing that... It's a mollusk, isn't it?
Oh, well, what's the difference?
Well, the mollusk is a thing that lives in a shell.
Oh, really?
Of invertebrate.
Well, I only know because, obviously, talking to Kristen, she says these are the shells that we find on the beach where we live.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, whether she actually means these are the mollusks inside the shells.
Oh, well, maybe they might not have had the mollusks inside them anymore. But maybe Sunray Venus is also the name of the shell, but I thought it was like a clam or a... oyster or mussel or one of those things.
Could it possibly be the name of the distortion pedal?
No.
It could be. It could be. That would be a hell of a coincidence. For her story, yeah. Scallops.
I thought it was quite good.
You always say that.
Never mind the scallops.
But I really like this as well. It's obviously in the same area as a lot of the stuff she does, particularly that acoustic guitar that's sounds very hard to play.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I obviously never buy anything physically. I always download it. But it's like 20 tracks on this album.
31 tracks.
It cost me £13.50. I was good.
It's quite literally happens, then, because you've got little bits of songs that appear twice or even three times.
But it ruins the whole economics of downloading.
It screws you, but it's a really good listen.
Yeah, I know. I'm just thinking I probably paid more than this than you, and you're actually in the record.
And I supported the maker, yeah.
I was gutted. Anyway, but, you know, besides that...
we should say, before we move on, Tanya Donnelly,
yeah... The listener might remember, on the last podcast, we played a song by The Breeders, and we were discussing the cover art on the front cover of The Breeders' first album, Pod. And we were saying, that looks like a naked man there.
Mm.
And I said that I believed, I'd read somewhere, that it was Vaughan Oliver, the guy who did all the 4AD sleeves.
Yeah, we did say
that. So we tweeted Tanya Donnelly. Yeah. Ex of The Breeders and half-sister, is that right?
Yeah, half-sister
of Kristen Ayres.
That's right, yeah.
And once of the Throne Muses. We tweeted her to ask what was going on the cover. And we, because we were assuming
course,
it was...
Yeah,
was it? We thought it was some kind of root vegetable.
Yeah.
But we couldn't have been more wrong.
No.
It turns out it was an eel.
Mm-hmm.
It is Vaughan Oliver in the picture. And the thing... that appears to be joined to his genitals is an eel.
It's Mark Everett.
Yes.
Get out of the bay, Mark Everett.
That's a commitment to art, to have your penis cut off so you could have an eel photographed in front of it.
Not every, you see, you'd do that for the pod, though, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, yeah.
But you have.
If it's not yet. We'll do that live.
Is it a live eel?
Sorry?
Is it a live eel?
Oh, sorry, yes. Well,
that would make a difference, wouldn't it?
An eel or a live eel?
Well, would you prefer to have a live eel or a dead eel as your genitalia?
No, I mean, if you're going dead eel. If you're talking about a live eel or a dead eel near my genitalia, then it's definitely going to be a dead eel.
Yeah.
Because a live eel's got teeth.
We're talking replacement.
Yeah. And might mistake...
You wouldn't have a penis
for another eel.
It's unlikely.
Yeah.
It's more likely to overlook it. That's not worth having.
Some kind of minnow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So long as he keeps his teeth off me scallops.
Right. I think the time is nigh for a Syrian wedding singer. And we're going to hear a song that is in... is Dabki. I'm sure you're fully aware.
A key.
Dabki, which is a style of folk dance music found at social gatherings across large swathes of the Middle East. And it's built around intricately filigreed instrumental leads, exhaustive singing and pounding, and trance-induced rhythms.
Right.
Yeah. Moreover, there are particularly weird, mad synth sounds. This is Omar Suleiman on an album Wenu Wenu, produced this year by Kieran. Is it Kieran Hebden?
Kieran Hebden.
Yeah, yeah. Out of Fortet. This is the title track. And it's obviously in Arabic, but I will translate a little bit for you.
Okay.
It's very much a love song. And it goes like this. He goes, "Where is she? Where is she? The one who I loved, where is she?" He's a bit lost at the moment. Yeah. "Where is she? Where is she? The one who I loved, where is she? And with her delicate mouth, who kills with her beautiful eyes, and with her delicate mouth. Where is she?"
Johnson!
Really enjoy that, and much more than I expected to.
Ah.
On first listen, I thought, "Where's he found this nonsense?" Well, no, is it? But Syrian dance music, yeah, absolutely. Mm. Well, it's such a wild synthesizer swirling around inside the thing, and obviously, I have no idea what he said. Werner.
Better not to know, I think, is the point.
Well, I just don't care, do you?
No,
I couldn't tell the lyrics on some of the other songs, to be honest with you.
No.
But no, absolutely fantastic, and I understand that. He made his name playing Syrian weddings.
That's right, yeah.
Played Syrian weddings. His own mix. Obviously, there must be some songs in there. But a really wild, loose mix. And then at the end of the night, he would sell the tapes to the punters.
Yeah.
And would then, on market, sell them on. And that's how he's made his name.
This is definitely the first produced album he's made. I think he's got a few out there which are bootlegs of...
180,000 albums he's got.
Has he really?
But of course, these are all more or less all live performances.
Right? Yeah.
Weddings.
Still not as many as Guided by Voices.
He's working on it.
I thought it sounded like an absolute riot. I loved it. And I think maybe that's where Al-Asad guy, maybe he could listen to a bit of that. Chillax a bit.
Good.
Stop all that killing.
Yeah, it'd be nice.
Yeah. But I thought there's some interesting sounding instruments going on there. I've said, I bet that's great live. So I went on YouTube and searched for that song live, expecting to see, you know, a good mix of modern and traditional instruments, acoustic and electronic, combining to whip up a storm.
Yeah.
And there was loads of videos of him like playing that song live, and weren't they exciting? No.
They weren't.
It's just Omar and one bloke with a synth. It's just one bloke with a synth.
Wow.
There's no live instruments. Not much to watch. So.
Well, right. What I've seen is that he doesn't like that he cut many shapes.
No, he's not the most dynamic performer in the world.
No.
But he gives it a good go. He's
a serious looking bloke, and he's got good shades.
Very good shades. As we see on the album cover.
The album cover, yeah, which I'm producing.
Do you like this album cover because it looks like a Middle Eastern dictator?
Yes.
Ah, right, I'm getting that.
Yes, well, it's him, and that's his microphone there. I also like the fact that it's on very thick vinyl.
I have
a little feel of that, just so they get a little squid.
Good God, can really hold it up.
Yeah, there's a lot of vinyl.
A lot of vinyl.
Yeah. I heard this song. It's asking me where I heard it. I heard it on a compilation. I don't normally buy compilations. In fact, I didn't buy this compilation. But it was. I bought something. I think it might have even been through Edwin Collins's AED Records. And there was a sampler in there from, I think, Domino Records. Anyway, I can't remember.
Right.
But there was a song. This song was on it. And I just heard it. I thought, that's fantastic. And it's one of those I kept wanting to listen to again. And I thought, I'll bring that to the pod. And I thought, no, I'll save it for the end of the year.
Well, I know the name because Bjork released, I think it might have been end of last year, but there was a remix album of some of the songs off Biophilia. And two of the very best ones are Omar Suleiman remixes, where they sound very Arabic. I'd never heard of him, but I knew his name because he was on these remixes.
Yeah.
And they're the best two remixes on. It's called Bastards.
Excellent.
The remix album is called Bastards.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because Soliman's label mates are Django Django, Laura Marlin, John Mouse at Domino. And Slav Vojek Zizek. That's probably pronounced wrong, I think.
You just dribbled down your own chair.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. That he says, we are effectively approaching a multi-centric world.
Mm.
It means that there's no boundaries in music anymore. So a British indie label signing a Syrian Syrian wedding singer, really.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's the norm.
That's perfectly reasonable.
Well, I'm happy about that. I mean, I've lived in the Middle East, and I really like Arabic music.
Mm.
But it tends not to be very, very well produced.
Mm.
I think this is produced well. I think it sounds fantastic.
Probably
not like much of his other records. But yeah, more of this, please.
Yes, well, I'll invite to my wedding.
More Omar. More Omar.
Okay.
More very good. Yes.
Omar.
Now, obviously, I was very excited to get Omar Suleiman on there. But I went a bit soon because actually I should have played this next song then, because this is another fan-funded album, in the same way that the Throwing Muses were. And this is Lloyd Cole, who I found something interesting about him. Apparently, he's a very good golfer, Lloyd Cole.
Oh!
Yes, and back in the day, played off five.
Wow.
Which is pretty impressive.
Respect.
He's in the top 10 golfing pop stars.
Iggy Pop.
I know that means a lot to you.
Do you know why he's good at golf?
Why is that?
Because his mum and dad owned a golf. Well, they were ran a golf course.
That's right.
Whatever
yes.
you call them, golf
yeah.
stewards or something like.
Yeah. Do they own it? Or
well,
they
were the people
yeah.
that managed it.
They were swingers, is what you said.
Yeah. Clubbers. Big clubbers. Yeah.
Can I just apologise to Lloyd for that terrible suggestion? Anyway, this is a great album. This is
they like to putt it about a bit.
Let of balls.
Yeah, right. Put from the rough.
Okay, Lloyd, I'm really sorry. Anyway, this is from his fantastic album called Standards. And actually, I first heard this live. I think he might have even been on that later show, which I don't often watch. But he played it live on that, and there was a really dirty guitar solo, which isn't on the record. But the record, nevertheless, is, I think, beautifully sad. And it's the line, "The longer you were gone, the less the longing," which I think really kills. So this is Lloyd Cole and Myrtle and Rose.
Turned to her, for she was always, always there. lost will be the souls of the wanton and the weak. And in the morning she'd be lying next to me. I would want for more, and she would give me more. So then it was for me to come a-calling at your window. You were never there, she doesn't live here, just a thin girl. The elevator operator told me so. So I would lay the table and wait for you to call. Staring at the myrtle and the rose, I would want for more.
It's good to hear him again. I'd not heard this album, but I did on the front cover of a uncut CD. There was a song from this album called "Period Piece," which I really, really liked. Yeah. So I'd be and I really like that one. So I'd be very interested to get the album. I have to admit, I lost contact with Lloyd Cole. I'm a massive fan of his first two albums with the Commotions, yeah. And I quite like the first solo album he did. And I really like "Don't Get Weird on Me, Babe." Which was about, 1993, something like that, I think. After that, I kind of lost track of what he was doing.
I'm not sure what he's doing either. No,
I've seen him live a couple of times, around about that kind of time. I played the Shepherd's Bush Empire, and it was a bit boring.
Was it?
Yeah, I have to say it was a bit boring. And then I saw him live in 2000, and he played an acoustic show somewhere in North London. And it was all... A bit boring and very dull. It didn't seem to have much of a stage presence. If you're just going to be playing new stuff, acoustic, you need to make a bit more of an effort. after.
Well, following on from that, I had no expectation of this. When you said we got a Lloyd Compton, I thought, well, back in the day...
Rattlesnakes, you didn't write that?
No. Fantastic. No, Perfect Skin. Well, yeah, yeah. I had to concede that was a very good song. But it was just... Girls seemed to like him a lot, which is good for him. But I was obviously a boy.
Then.
Now it didn't really hit home. But the strange thing was, and then, so I was talking against it. I thought, I will deliberately hate this record.
Right.
And played it a few times. Yeah, I think I can comfortably do that. And it grew me a little bit. And I thought, well, this is all right. A longing bit. And then a later thing, and again, I hate later. It's a terrible program. Should be taken off a proper music program. Yeah. But he was on. And
he was quite good on that, wasn't he?
He was very good on that, yeah. Mm. And you said that guitar sound that came in and later, I thought, I don't remember that bit. Went back and listened to it again a number of times, and I think this is actually really good, isn't it? And
I think he's got a good, pretty good band with him now, because I think they're called the Leopards, they're a Glasgow band, in the same way that the Commotions were a Glasgow band, weren't they, I think?
Yeah.
So I think if you did go and see him with the band, I think it will be probably more interesting than just seeing him on his own. Because they can rock, I think.
One of the times I saw him, he had Robert Quine. He was in, what was he in? One of those New York... not television, was he in television?
No.
One of those bands from that era.
Robert Lloyd was in.
Richard Lloyd. No, Robert Quine. Fred Mayer, who played on lots of early 80s and 90s Lou Reed stuff, and it was that. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't very good. But anyway, I like the fact that you started, you know, it's, nearly 30 years since... Mm-hmm. Since Perfect Skin,
83, wasn't it?
Yeah, 30 years then, and he's starting to update his cultural references a little bit. He's not still talking about On the Waterfront and Simone de Beauvoir and Norman Mailer.
No, he's not. But
he mentions a Photoshop.
Yeah, I didn't understand. I didn't understand that bit.
Quark Express in there.
Is that what that is? What is that? I don't even know what it is.
It's a desktop publishing application.
Okay, I don't need to know what it is. But I didn't like that because I didn't understand it. But what I did like is this Myrtle and Rose. Are you familiar with what that is?
No idea.
Because you read the title and you think it's about two old bids, isn't it? But it's not.
Right.
Rose, obviously, you know, is a plant, but so is the myrtle. Myrtle's like a house plant.
Oh. So, what is it, a gentle house plant and then a prickly thorny rose?
I'm not that familiar with the myrtle.
Neither am I.
I think it's a green shrub type thing.
So he's singing about two shrubs?
He's not, no.
Because there's a bit where it says you could be the one who comes walking down there, and shrubs can't walk. I don't know much about botany.
I'm not sure that you particularly listen particularly closely to this. The song is not about the plants, but he does one line looking at the myrtle and the rose. He's longingly thinking of something, I don't know.
Well, I have to say, I wrote down exactly the line I've heard very monologue. The longer you were gone, the less the longing. But I found that bit very, very moving. I really did like the song as well.
That is very pretty.
To end on a golfing reference, it's a hit.
Understated is the third album to be released since Edwyn Collins suffered a double brain hemorrhage in 2005. Forsooth, which is the title of this song, which I think is a very Collinsian word, this song I think has a distinct Velvet Underground feel to it, particularly it reminds me of Sunday Morning. So lots of background information here. It's a celebration of life that Edwyn is coming from. In a terrible place. And I really think that he sings convincingly about his luck in being alive and his joy in feeling reborn. In any other artist's hands, you'd think this would be really cloying and a little bit too much.
Yeah.
But I think it really works. I don't think anyone else could transmit this as movingly as Edwyn does.
Sunday, it's a good feeling. It's Sunday, it's a good feeling. And I'm lazy, I'm contented. I'm feeling lazy, I'm contented. I'm so happy to be alive. I'm so happy to be alive. I feel alive, and I feel
reborn, and I feel alive, and I feel reborn. It's a good, good feeling. Forsooth, I'll be alright. What's the point of being ungrateful? In my life, I'll be alright. I'm so lucky to be alive. I'm so lucky. I feel alive, and I feel reborn.
Break.
gutted. So you put this in. I'm absolutely gutted because in 2010, you shared a video of a song called Tightrope off David Letterman.
Yeah.
And I thought, that is the best live performance I've seen in decades. Until this.
Yes.
Gutted.
Well, that was a live version. It's actually the live version taken from that Jules Holland later show, which we don't like.
Which
is the second time we've mentioned it in glowing terms. And I was so impressed by the live performance. So much energy. Yeah.
And listen, you may have heard, just at the end of the song, you heard...
Yeah.
And that was the microphone hitting the floor as she walked off.
Being thrown to the floor, really.
I think so, yeah. I don't know.
Attitude!
She wasn't in a huff. She was in a shamanistic state.
Yes.
That meant she just fucking threw her.
Yeah.
I'm off. I'm going to lie down.
I mean, the whole thing about that video is great. The band's great. The synchronised backing singers in their stripy tops. Full of sex and gorgeousness.
Sex and rock and roll.
And rock and roll, yeah. Perhaps I'll put the video to this on our blog, because I think everybody needs to see it.
Yeah.
You do.
Mm. I don't understand how I thought, because she had that big hit with that band Fun, you know, We Are Young. You probably wouldn't know it.
No.
But it's massive.
That sounds like Super Blast.
That's the one, yeah. Yeah, that was a massive hit. Well, it was somebody featuring her. I think they called Fun.
Yeah.
Fun featuring. And I thought, right, when she's got her new album coming out, that's going to be massive now, because she's had a little breakthrough hit with them. Nothing. I mean, that song there should be like a massive global smash, like that Outkast Hey Ya song, which is sounds a little bit in the same vein, and the performance is a bit in the same vein.
Yeah.
Didn't even make the charts.
This didn't chart at all.
Number 79 in Ireland.
Wow. I bought a single.
Number 79 in Ireland. Did you buy in Ireland?
No, I bought it here. So I'm probably the only person who did.
Well, yeah, it's in fact, yeah.
But she is amazing. Everything about her. I love everything about her.
Have to say. I listened to it's from the album Electric Lady. The version on the album is good, but I think it's lacking something. It's not as good as that live version.
I like the version on the album. You say you love everything about her. Me too, but the thing I love about her probably more than anything else is her hair.
Great hair.
Yeah. I think she's got the best hair any woman I can think of.
And her really is sort of just a quiff.
It's just a quiff.
She's got everything else.
Yeah.
It's no just a quiff.
Yeah.
Which, what do you need?
That is the best bit. It's like the top of a muffin, isn't it? You just want the muffin top, just have the quiff.
You go into a barber's set, I want a muffin top.
In fact, if I could go and buy a wig that was just the quiff, I would.
Yes.
I would wear that.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. But the reason I think she's... And I think she's fairly commercially successful in America, I think.
Have we said who it was?
Janelle Monáe.
With
Double
Dance Apocalypse.
Dance Apocalypse. From the album Electric Lady.
Yeah.
But on the Tightrope song, which is utterly genius.
Is that 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
2010, I think.
Yeah.
But it was taken from a concept album.
The Arch Android.
Yeah. And she puts herself out as the Arch Android.
Yeah.
It's not the most commercially obvious thing to do.
Well, this is a concept album as well, I think.
Yeah.
The Electric
Lady. I think she's still an android.
Is she?
In some of the songs, she's still...
A bequiffed android.
And of course, when you've got Miley Cyrus jigging about there with nothing on whatsoever, you've got Janelle Monáe, who refuses to take her tuxedo off.
Mm. Yep.
Although, to be fair, in the video, she does take her jacket off.
She does take her jacket off.
Which is very effective for me.
Yep.
But she says, I bathe in it, I swim in it, and I could be buried in it.
That's a tuxedo.
Yes, a tux is such a standard uniform. It's so classy, and it's a lifestyle I enjoy. The tux keep me balanced.
Well, I think that's definitely my favourite pop song of the year, that one. Can we just have a quick nod to Edwin?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I'm just actually in the middle here of tweeting a picture of the sleeve of the Edwin Collins thing.
And we've
talked about Edwin a lot on this podcast before. You guys did an album review of his last album, and me and you went to see him live
at
Liverpool Cathedral. And we're just playing a track on our Best of 2000 podcast by Edwin Collins, a true hero of the Wizards.
Legacy, eh? How will we be remembered? It's all over the Olympics, isn't it? And the World Cup, and it seems to be much more about what's going to happen after the event rather than the event itself. Anyway, this is the band Low from their 10th album, which is called The Invisible Way. And perhaps unsurprisingly, I think it sounds a bit like Wilco. The album itself was produced by Jeff Tweedy. And this band, I always enjoy their stuff. I really like the harmonies. But this song is about the legacy of a plastic cup.
You could always count on your friends to get you high. That's right. You could always count on the rents to get you by. You could fly. Now they make you piss into a plastic cup and give it up. A cup will probably be here long after we're gone. What's wrong? Probably dig it up a thousand years from now. And how? They'll probably wonder what the hell we used it for. And more. This must be the cup the king held every night as he
boring.
Did you?
Really?
But yeah,
the way they
would guess.
Well, you had to be, you know, if I was miserable, I'd have enjoyed it. and I listened to it again and again. I thought, what's he on about?
No.
It's about a plastic cup.
It is, yeah.
And I'm not saying you can't do a good song about a plastic cup, but it's stretching it. Oh. Really didn't engage me at all.
Did you not think that I thought the interesting thing about the plastic cup is that it wasn't just any plastic cup he was singing about. He was singing about the plastic cup that you piss in when you go to the doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And he was saying that it, many hundreds of years from now, someone might find this plastic cup and they'll wonder what it was for, and they might think it was a cup that a king would drink out of.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Some kind of royal chalice.
Yes.
Yeah.
I like that.
But it wasn't, it was a cup that someone weed into.
Well, you see, that's what you see all these programmes on TV, don't you? What's his name? Him out of
Time Team.
Time
yes.
Team.
Baldrick.
Baldrick. Baldrick. Yeah. 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 He picks,
Sir Baldrick, as I think we have to call him.
He picks up stuff out of the ground and goes, "Oh, look at this! I bet somebody once did something with that." And it's all this
yeah.
is what happens now.
Yeah.
Everything's given value.
Yeah. So what you're saying is that something that people consider profound might be something that's not profound whatsoever and very mundane.
I am thinking.
But the converse to that, I can see there's some philosophical frisson that you might get with that. But I think you might pick it up and think, no, it is something mundane. Which ruins the whole preface of the song, doesn't it? You thought it was mundane, and they thought it was mundane.
Oh. Well, I think the advice there is write your own damn song. We've talked a lot about John Grant on our Grant versus Bowie album review pod in March.
Which he won.
He did win, yeah, he did win. And this album, Pale Green Ghost, is very electronic. It's got that Icelandic musician, Birger Baranninsson, is that right?
don't know. Gus.
Gus, funny, yeah. Biggie Vieira. I don't know. I don't know about his name at all. Anyway, yeah, Gus. And I do like that album very much, and obviously it's better than Bowie's album, we've decided that already. But when I got that album, I went through Rough Trade, and there was a limited EP, a Strong Room EP, which is just him on the piano, and it was limited to 300 copies, which pleased me, exclusive to that club. And that was the version I really liked. And we've actually played this version before, and it says, you don't have to, but actually we do have to play it again.
Remember walking hand in hand, side by side. We walked the dogs and took long strolls through the park, except we never had dogs and never went to the park. Remember how we used to fuck all night long? Neither do I, because I always passed out. I needed lots of the booze to handle the pain. You don't have to pretend to care. You don't have to say things that you don't pretend to care. You don't have to say things that you don't mean. It just embarrasses me and makes you look like a I feel
feel so stupid cause I let myself down. I acting like a motherfucking clown at a circus on the outskirts of town. You don't have to pretend to care. Say things that you don't mean. You don't have to pretend to care. You don't have to say things that you don't mean. It just embarrasses me. Because you think you're so fucking cool.
That song made me put pen to paper.
Did it?
I felt I had to write.
Oh.
Write an open letter to John Grant.
God help us. Is it in the style of a rap?
No, not this time.
Yeah.
Dear John, thanks for telling the world about our recent relationship. It's a shame that you didn't see to view it with great fondness. For the record, I did want to fuck all night long, and it was you passed out. In fact, I was gagging for it. But no, you're right. I did pretend to care when really, I didn't give a crap. To be honest, I was just being polite. If that's a fault, I apologise. But to be fair, when faced with a rampant narcissist burying their soul in a drug-fueled frenzy, most people wouldn't go for all that confrontation, for fear of their own lives. And for the record, yes, I do think I'm fucking cool. And actually, I do now have a dog. Yours, Rebel Stallion, Ricketts.
Hey.
I felt I had to say that.
Yeah. I'm not sure that song was about you, but oh, good, yeah.
You don't know.
He's so vain, he probably thinks the song is about him. we've played that song before, yeah. We've talked about John Grant before. I was pleased to see, that was also an album that's doing very, very well in all these end-of-year pop.
Is it?
Not just here, but even on some... There are, believe it or not, there are some more esteemed and highly...
I can't believe that.
Other people who do
this. Why wouldn't other people want
to? Yeah, Rough Trade, number one album, I think.
Really?
Rough Trade. I still prefer the first album, I have to say.
I still prefer the first album.
But I can give you a little sneak preview. There's another song, not the same song, but there's another song from that album on my mix, which will be recorded very soon.
So I'm sure you look forward to writing a letter again.
Yes.
Depends on the content. Okay. We specifically talk about our relationship, though. I've got betrayed.
Okay. I know we've talked about the opening lines of it, but I'm still... marvel when I think back to that time we saw him in Manchester,
yeah.
And he opened the gig with this song, yeah. Which we'd never heard before because it was an unreleased song at the time, and he's those opening lines, you know, about, you know, walking the dogs in the park, except we never had dogs and never went to the park and all that kind of stuff.
Did you feel ever so slightly uncomfortable?
No,
we were laughing. It's funny.
I have to say that the thing about the live version, when we saw him live, we just had a message from John.
I think that's
John's writing back to you. What has he got to say?
Advent Day 11, find out what's behind today's door.
Oh, wow.
That's a plug for the Trust the Wizards Advent calendar.
It's going
all the way through December.
Yeah, check it out.
Yeah.
Trustthewizards.com.
It's good quality.
Is it the 11th still?
It is.
It's the just come on to
possibly a bit late.
No, about the live thing. Well, the thing was about the live version. He did play it. There was a grand piano, wasn't there?
Yeah.
But he also had this little synthesizer thing, which
yeah,
made
an retro synthesizer.
Incredible noise.
It did.
And the sort of the solo bit, sort of three quarters of the way through, which on the grand piano sounds great, and I'm sure it's really difficult to play on the piano. I think the synthesizer sounds better.
Well, as a matter of fact, I agree with you, and I've written down here that the version with the crazy synth solo in the middle is astounding, and it's not on YouTube from the gig we went to at Manchester RNCM, but if you Google John Grant RRR, then there's a thing called the Triple R, and there's that version of that song is on there, and I think it's even better than that. I'll pick up on a very, very minor technical point that you said in your introduction. I don't think that's John Grant playing the piano on that version of the song. I think he's just singing, and it's the other guy.
Right, so he plays the piano.
I don't know.
That synthesizer solo thing is on the album version of that song.
Yes, but
if I could transpose that solo bit onto this, I think that would be the best version for me.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you've chosen, and you'll find out soon that I've also chosen one of the songs from that album that sounds like the first album.
Yeah, I think it's quite deliberate, isn't it?
Yeah,
even off the disco.
A bit too much for me, the Beats.
I liked it.
You didn't like it.
I love both albums, but I think that he writes such great lyrics. I know you were slightly upfronted by it. He writes such great lyrics that it's a bit like we've talked about before in the Magnetic Fields guy.
Yes.
Yeah, he writes all these great lyrics, and then sometimes you can't hear them because of all the... There's so much going on.
You can hear his lyrics.
You can on that one, but on some of the others, like Black Belt, you can't hear
them. I cannot remember if I disliked it a lot.
At the time.
On the podcast that we
did. No, what you said was, you listened to it and you thought, this is shit.
Yes, that's right, yes.
And then you possibly listened to it again and thought, it's still shit. And then you thought, oh no, it might be alright. And then you came around, and by the time we recorded the pod, you actually quite liked it. Presume you've listened to it once since then and have reverted to your original.
I remember disliking it and I remember liking it. I couldn't remember which one I settled on. I did quite like it by the end. But he was lucky he was up against the David Bowie album, which I really disliked. So he won by default, really.
Let's just tell the listener to go and listen to that mini podcast we
did. Figure out what I think. Listen to that podcast.
Yeah.
That's the end of Part 1 of Kick-Ass Best of 2013. For Part 2, go back to the blog.